construction jobs, there are actually more than 500 jobs. So, honourable members, the NEF has a dual mandate, which is broadly to grow black economic empowerment through financial and non-financial support, as well as by encouraging a culture of savings and investment among black individuals and organized groups. At the heart of the mandate of the NEF is the resolve to address and mitigate the challenges and market failures that typically confront black entrepreneurs. For each market failure, honorable members, we have identified, that the NEF has identified, we have a range of applicable solutions, which will be looking at products and services that are aimed at actually mitigating some of those risks and challenges that we have identified, which are the subject of various sections of this particular presentation. So the market failures include, so we know that the market failures, and we have developed products and services to actually try and address those particular issues. The most obvious one would be the lack of access to affordable finance. So it's about the type of financing. We're not saying there's a shortage of funding in the country, but it's about the structure and the type of funding that is actually lacking within the South African economy. That would talk to the lack of your venture capital funding, because sometimes people will say, but people are sitting on a pile of cash, and then we'll always say it's about the type of instrument that you put there. So for instance, I will give you an example. I've said to the honorable members that if you look at some of the new industries that have developed over the last 5 to 10 years, you'll then wonder, so let's talk about the renewable energy industry, where the country has invested more than 200 billion over the last 5 years, but there are still no black players in that particular industry. It's a new industry. It happened right in front of us. The barriers to entry there would be the types of funding that are required that would have allowed our black industrialists to also play a role there. So venture capital is one of them, because before you can even take your feasibility studies and be in a position to submit to the Department of Energy, there's a lot of funding that is required before you are even able to take your applications to that level. So there's also lack of accurate and reliable information and lack of business planning skills. I don't have to actually explain why we are in this situation. There's lack of access to local and international markets. There's poor or inadequate specific industry knowledge or management experience. There's limited or no equity contribution, and a low asset base and a low bargaining power with suppliers and customers. You have met, we're sitting outside. I'm aware that you met with some of the top retailers from South Africa. You'll be aware that the retail and industry is one of the strategic sectors that we have within our economy. Most of the retailers are successful today because they will tell you even their statistics that what has actually driven the growth that we have seen over the last 20 years, whether you're talking cars or just normal retail as in your Pick and Pay, the people who are driving that growth are black consumers. We are driving the growth, which is why some of them have even moved from the European countries and the US to come and set up here. When you ask them why are you setting up in South Africa, they will tell you that it's because of the emergence of the so-called the black middle class or the black diamonds. But unfortunately, it doesn't matter where you go to, waterfront here, in Cape Town or, Sandton, in Johannesburg, there are no or very little black players, within this particular sector. So I was very excited. I don't know what you are discussing when I heard that our portfolio committee has actually, decided to engage very closely with the sector. the NEF provides the funding solutions for the implementation of the BBBEE Code of Good Practice. This table outlines the NEF's interventions in addressing the various codes of good practice, such as ownership, management control, skills development, enterprise and supplier development, as well as socioeconomic development, and how these compare with interventions by other financial institutions, such as your IDCs, your CIFAs, DBSA, Land Bank, and other commercial banks. As an example, in addressing the ownership code, the NEF has a range of products such as acquisition finance, capital markets, liquidity and warehousing fund, strategic project fund, startup and expansion capital. While in addressing the socioeconomic development, the NEF has the rural and community development fund as a solution as well. So we have actually developed a product and expertise in the various areas of our intervention. Honorable members, we have in the past made the point that if we use the JSE as a proxy, black people are still excluded from the economic spectrum in its entirety. When we make this statement, Madam Chairperson, it's not a way of criticizing anybody, because I think as a country, as a collective, all we are saying is to say we have to be alive to the challenges that we are faced with. Because sometimes in our various areas of responsibility or expertise, we may actually sit back and think that all is going well. All we are saying is the NEF is that we don't want to wake up, if we'll still be alive 20 years down the line, and realize that we're sitting in the Trade and Industry Portfolio Committee, or we were also given the privilege to serve in organizations like the NEF, but we did not actually tell the truth as is, because we actually have the know-how to determine the level of black ownership within the South African economy. So it's something that maybe the portfolio committee, so we're giving you the information to actually say that as we currently speak, we are actually sitting at this level, if you were to use the market capitalization of the JSE as a proxy. So we're not saying this just because we happen to be here in Parliament. We have actually had quite a number of interactions with the JSE itself. So we're not just talking in a vacuum. So we'll sit with Miss Nikki, Newton King, who happens to be, a very close associate of ours, to actually pinpoint the challenges and the areas that we are concerned about. So in fact, she has even visited us to our offices where we were unpacking this data and the statistics to actually try and determine the level of black equity within the South African economy. So that is why the NEF does not limit its funding only to SMEs, but indeed seeks to see black people also owning major corporations. In the view of the NEF, therefore, black business does not equate to small business. So if you look at the various product offerings, what we do, we actually start by providing funding for startups. So we'll start a company from being a startup, like the Gorge that you are seeing there, that is a startup. But our intention would be to grow with the company as it grows. So we don't want black people to actually remain at the SMME level. So we'll provide what we call second round funding. So we'll give you maybe 5 million as a startup capital. Then it goes up maybe to 20 million. Now we are providing what we would refer to as expansion capital. So as this company grows and expands, that's where you're going to be able to create additional jobs for our economy. So it grows with us until it becomes a global player. So for instance, if I use the example of Busa Hospitals, Madam Chairperson, we opened the few hospitals where we had also invited the Honorable Members of Parliament. There's a hospital that is owned by our black doctors. Here in Cape Town, we have opened another hospital in Bloemfontein together with our partners, but the NEF only invested just a little bit, because we put in about 100 million. So we started with 10 million, it grew to 100 million. When it reached the 100 million mark, we realized that we needed to go to other funders now, like the PIC. So the PIC ended up investing about 1. Something billion in the same project that actually started as a startup. So, and I'm very pleased, Madam Chairperson, to inform the honorable members that that entity that started with 10 million, which is today a 2.4 billion because of the leveraging of the additional funding that we have received from the PIC, is going for a listing. We're going to be listing it. So that's why, thank you, Madam Chair. That's why I thought I should share some of these examples with you. For this reason, the NEF funds across the economic spectrum with specialist investment funds dedicated to supporting SMEs, women-owned businesses, rural and community-owned businesses, medium-sized enterprises, as well as potential industrial players, which are financed through the Strategic Projects Fund. The NEF, honorable members, offers an array of non-financial support interventions, starting with the pre-investment function as the first point of contact through which the NEF provides product advisory services, manages the online business plan solution, and facilitates entrepreneurial training and incubation. And this is a differentiator for us, honorable members, because if you go to a normal commercial bank, you'll never be able to get this pre-investment support where you just walk in with nothing but with a concept in your head. You'll actually, if you visit, you've been to our offices, you'll see the level of activity that actually happens, you know, as you walk into the NEF, because we always say that we're a funder with a soul, because you will allow anybody just to walk in. You want information, you'll actually get that information. So this is another differentiator. The NEF Socioeconomic Development Unit was established to empower black people in existing transactions and other broad-based groups through various social development interventions such as social facilitation, entrepreneurial training and investor education, corporate governance training and market access to facilitate meaningful participation. So when we did, when the country did the renewable energy program, there is a requirement that if you are a Spanish company, well, a lot of the companies that got those tenders, you know, to get into the renewable energy space with foreign companies, unfortunately. So there is the requirement that 3% of equity should be given to the communities where these renewable energy companies were actually set up. So those would be just ordinary, communities who have no business experience, no managerial experience. So what the NEF has been doing in that space, honorable members, is to actually go and train our beneficiaries about what it means to be part of a big project like that, because you are, you know, a partner in a project which has, you know, big investors like the Spanish companies or American companies. You don't even understand what your rights are in that particular investment. So what this unit, the Socioeconomic Development Unit, would do in a situation like that would be to go and actually guide them, you know, in terms of their rights and their responsibilities as the beneficiaries of those particular investments. I was using renewable energy, but it's across the board. We did a similar thing with the investment that we did in Bamohale community in the Marikana region, because we have just made a big investment of about 100 million rands. Last year, in fact, I took the committee through all the salient features of that particular project that we are doing with with the community in the Marikana area. So it's a partnership between the Bakoba Mohale community and Lonmin. So we wanted to guide the community that, yes, it's a good investment. What does it mean, unpacking it for them? It's work in progress because it's going to take us a long time before we're able to conclude on all of those on all of those issues. But we have already started those engagements with them. Through the post-investment unit, the NEF provides ongoing portfolio management and mentorship support and is responsible for collections as well as legal compliance. So we don't just leave our investments that you'll invest and then you forget. You continuously provide the mentorship support. And in this regard, Madam Chairperson, we've been working with, so we have a team, the internal team that focuses on post-investment support. And we also work with a lot of retired business people, engineers, accountants who would actually go into these companies once a month and make sure that they are properly trained in the various aspects of running a business. So lastly, honorable members, we also have the turnaround workouts and restructuring unit, which focuses mainly on rehabilitating distressed transactions, or this is what we call our ICU division, and reducing impairments. The unit does through a combination of measures, including operational restructuring on how to turn that particular business around. We look at the balance sheet restructuring, equity or working capital injection. So we'll basically look at what that particular entity needs. Slide 11, these are just straightforward key strategic objectives for your bedtime reading, but I won't take the committee through all of them because they are very familiar unless you have questions on that. Slide number 12 as well. Just wanted to refresh your memories. Slide number 13 is the empowerment dividend. So here, Madam Chairperson was saying even though the NEF places an important focus on the commercial viability of the investment, our mandate also focuses on other softer measures in assisting applications for funding. And these include the development indicators such as, so when we look at a project or an investment, we want to see whether this project has the black women empowerment in it. We want to see if there's community involvement. Obviously, black ownership is the obvious one. And we also want to see how many jobs are going to be created as a result of that particular investment. We want to also look at their geographic location. So if you look at a project and it actually encapsulates most of these developmental indicators, it would then impact positively on the pricing. So if you look at the interest rate, if it's a loan instrument that you are putting in, your project, you know, it's in one of the economically depressed areas of the country, it has women in it, it has the community. So if you were to look at the pricing, you may actually end up at prime minus two as an example, or just at prime. But if it's a project that doesn't give us any of these developmental benefits, obviously we'll be charging just the normal commercial rates that you'd find from other organizations. So these measures, honorable members, form part of the developmental ethos, which the NEF upholds as the underlying theme of its funding strategy, and together we refer to it as the empowerment dividend. Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, the next series of slides will specifically focus on the 2017-18 strategic plan, and the following key pillars will anchor this plan. So when we contract with the Department of Trade and Industry, we'll go into our corporate plans, and then we'll have our shareholder compact with the department, and these are the things that they measure the NEF on, or Parliament can also, I'm sure Parliament will also measure us on the same objectives. So our number one objective is the advancement of broad-based black economic empowerment. we talk about the maximization of the empowerment dividend. I have already explained what the empowerment dividend is. We are also looking at increasing the woman-funded portfolio. It's about promoting a culture of savings and investments amongst black people. It's the creation of black industrialists and the maintaining of the financial efficiency and sustainability, which looks at our return on investment and the impairment levels and so on. So it is also important to submit to the committee that will continue to focus on the other key imperatives, such as growing investments across all provinces to ensure that we entrench the benefits of the NEF support across the country. We'll also continue providing ongoing business planning and mentorship support, corporate governance training, as well as incubation support. So those are the non-financial support measures that we have put in place. Slide 16, the NEF will also continue to finance business ventures established and managed by black people, and because our systems and processes have reached maturity, our approvals, commitments, and disbursements will continue to increase year on year. So, honorable members, if you look at this particular slide, you'd actually see that in the previous years, the NEF in 2012-2013, were actually, in terms of our approvals, were sitting at about 1.3 billion. So we would have expected this trend to be on a higher growth trajectory if Parliament had actually allocated, you know, sufficient funds to the NEF. So if you look at the graph, it's actually declining because of the moratorium in 2013, where the NEF board and the minister took a decision that maybe we had to put our operations on hold, so we're no longer receiving, we did not receive any additional applications, and it really pains me it pains us honorable members to actually turn our applicants back because we actually don't have sufficient funding. So we've been doing that over a period of time now. So where we'll say, so how many transactions? So the board will say, you can't actually trade recklessly. It's an accounting term. So what that means is that you are receiving more applications than what you can actually, allocate to those particular enterprises. So we had to actually turn them away and say, please go and try with other, DFIs. So this is where we've been. If we had been appropriately funded, we're sitting at 1.3 in 2012-2013. I'm sure by now we could easily be sitting at about 2 billion per annum. And remember that we're doing, it's not like 2 billion in one transaction. It's like very, very small investments that we're making in supporting our black-owned enterprises. Slide 18. The second strategic objective focuses on investing in black-owned businesses that have high employment creation impact. Evident in the next slide is that the NEF has continued to increase the number of jobs supported year on year. In March 2011, we had supported 25,500 jobs, and we have since grown this to over 92,000 jobs to date. So if we had not put our operations on hold, we could have easily reached 200,000 jobs by now. So the targeted number of jobs expected to be supported in the next financial year is just over 4,000. This will increase by an additional 5,600 jobs in the subsequent year and well over 7,000 jobs in the year ending 2020. But I have to also say to the honorable members that we actually have the capacity to do more than what we have just highlighted here, because we are basing it on the funding that has been made available to us. So the third strategic objective supports the participation of black women in the economy through our Women Empowerment Fund and through relations with organizations that represent women in businesses. We'll continue to place high and dedicated focus on funding women-owned and managed businesses and targeting a minimum of 40% year-on-year. And Madam Chairperson, you should be very proud about the work that the NEF is doing in this area, because so far I haven't seen a DFI that has a target of 40% so far. So it's something that we actually pride ourselves in. The fourth strategic objective seeks to facilitate investment across all provinces in South Africa. In fact, I haven't seen, Madam Chairperson, another DFI that has this as their target, where we are saying our investments in the past were skewed 60% were in Gauteng, and now we have actually reduced that percentage to about 50%. Slide 22, the fifth strategic objective seeks to optimize non-financial support while encouraging and promoting a culture of savings, investments, and meaningful economic participation by black people. In the previous financial year, the NEF was able to complete 48 investor education seminars against a target of 32. So, Madam Chairperson, we believe that this, and honorable members, this provision of non-financial support is going to be very key going forward, because if, as a country, we're saying we actually want to reduce the level of unemployment, by 2020 or 2025, or if we say that we want to put emphasis on SME development, we can't be saying that if we're not also investing, our time and efforts in ensuring that our people are empowered in terms of how do you create a company. Because sometimes all they need is to actually just get access. You have developed this particular concept, so how do you go about marketing it? How do you actually open up markets for yourself, both in the local and international markets? So this is what we've been doing in this particular area.
Madam, impressed with this issue of promoting and encouraging savings and investment, and I know the Honourable Williams must have also taken a note there, as well as other members, because of our focus at the moment on the committee's bill we're undertaking on debt relief, but also
absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chairperson. So I wanted to share this story, Madam Chairperson. So we're talking billions when I was talking about the hospitals. Yes. So we must be able to think big and also think about the small opportunities for our, I can't even call them SMEs. So I attended the World Economic Forum last week. So it was attended more than 1,000 delegates and ladies from the continent, from the US, from UK, they saw this phone holder. Everybody was asking me, where did you get this from? We actually want to go. And it's done by rural women.
You see, it's got transported, but technically it doesn't have funding. Okay, well, we do it. I'm going to have to call it.
The beads. But it's about that, Honorable Member. Absolutely. So I was thinking, because I kept on referring them to a shop. It's like right in the city center in Durban, there's a place, it's a market. It's called Victoria. And there was no way they would be able to access that place. You can only access it if you're from, it's mixed up, I don't know. So, but I'm just, maybe the point I'm making, Madam Chairperson, if we want to be creative and innovative about these things, we could have asked these women, because especially your other ladies from, you know, other African countries, they love this stuff. So we could have just kept them outside the World Economic Forum, and then they set up their small stalls there. So I'm just saying we have to think out of the box about, because I paid about 200 rands, but you could easily sell this for 50 euros. Just for the members to see. Okay. Thank you. Slide 23. The sixth strategic objective, honourable members, will ensure that black economic empowerment is advanced through commercially sustainable enterprises. This will pursue by providing entrepreneurship training to budding entrepreneurs, mostly in the six priority provinces identified earlier, and primarily to women, targeting 18 training sessions per annum between 2017 and 2020. And would be happy to work with Honorable Mantash just in terms of providing this training to the women that we've been working with. You just the only thing you must tell us, it's in this area. You can assist us in terms of organizing, but the NEF will provide all the other support to those women. Honorable members, on slide 24, which is the seventh objective. This objective aims to entrench the recognition of the NEF in the South African economy as a credible and meaningful development financial institution. In 2015-16, following a national brand audit survey, the NEF enjoyed 81% brand awareness across various stakeholder groups, including entrepreneurs, business bodies, and the mass media. So we actually want to build on this achievement, where we're now sitting at about 81%. The eighth strategic objective is to establish the NEF as a sustainable DFI. This we intend achieving by arresting impairments and increasing our collection ratios, which has been increasing over a period of time. Life-to-date performance milestones, which the committee is familiar with, from operational inception in 2005, yes, to the end of December 2016, the NEF had approved 852 transactions worth more than 8.6 billion for black empowered businesses across the country. This was a significant milestone, Honorable Chairperson, in view of the fact that we had only received 2 billion from the South African government, but we've been able to disperse 8.6 billion from internally generated funds. Over 5.8 billion of this is capital that has gone directly into the economy. As the portfolio committee is aware, for 11 years running, the NEF has secured clean external audit opinions, which attest to the organization's integrity and financial management acumen. To date, through its funding milestone, the NEF has supported in excess of 92,000 jobs countrywide. Recapitalization will also help propel the full commercialization of all the 27 strategic and industrial or black industrial projects that we have developed in partnership with our local and international investors. These are valued at 28.6 billion, with the potential to support a further 85,000 jobs. In the 28.6 billion, you'll already have BUSA hospitals. That alone is currently sitting at about 2.4, 2.6 billion. The Asonge share scheme remains one of the most seminal public share offers in our country, having brought over 12 million MTN shares into the hands of 87,000 black investors. So on this one, honorable members, we're in discussions with the PIC. So what the PIC is saying is that they have also identified a few investments where they would actually want to roll out retail offers for the black beneficiaries, and we're saying we'd be very happy to actually form a partnership with them. You know, they had already given us a list of those that they would like to do with us. Slide 28. On the recapitalization priorities, the recapitalization of the NEF, honorable members, has indeed been a long journey. As honorable members are aware, it is a journey that began in 2004 when government undertook here at Parliament to fund the NEF to the tune of 10 billion over the next 5 years, but this has not yet taken place. Only 2 billion was allocated over the last 10 years. So, Madam Chairperson, there's no way we can be talking about radical economic transformation as a country if our government and if Parliament is not allocating appropriate funding to institutions like the National Empowerment Fund, which are institutions that can actually assist this country to actually drive the implementation of broad-based black economic empowerment. However, we are pleased to update the committee of the following developments. Firstly, the Minister of Trade and Industry and the Minister of Economic Development have approved the business combination process between the NEF and the IDC. The process is now moving through the requisite legal and regulatory processes, and the IDC's due diligence of the NEF has begun. As part of the business combination process, the ministers have also recommended that the IDC grant the NEF a bridging facility effective 1 April 2017 to continue its operations pending finalization of the business combination process. So one of those legal due diligences that the IDC is looking at would be issues like how do you convert a trust, because the NEF is a trust, into a PTY limited. And yes, because that's how we were actually set up. So it's going to require quite a lot of legal work, and obviously eventually it will be approved by Parliament once we have gone through all of those processes. An application also for a PIC facility of 1 billion is currently in progress. The PIC has concluded a due diligence process on the NEF, and the application is going through its relevant approval structures. We've also approached the UIF through the Minister of Labour, who approached the NEF to say that she was very impressed with the work that the NEF has done in the Marikana area, and that she would also want to have a partnership with the NEF where the NEF could possibly or potentially access some of the UIF funding. So the NEF has now applied for subsidies for non-financial support with the Unemployment Insurance Fund. In this regard, an application for 50 million has been submitted to the UIF Labour Activation Program. That's the name of the program.
Were you referring to the Minister of Labour?
Yes.
Oh, right.
Yes. So what that says, honourable members, because I will also just go to the work that we're doing with the Department of, I call it Dr. DLR, Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. So what it says is that even though the NEF has been quietly doing its work, other government departments, we're actually able to see the value add that the NEF can actually, you know, have on some of their other initiatives. So, and we're very pleased about the work that we're doing with them. So on the projected unencumbered cash position of the NEF's actual cash to date stands at 1.35 billion. The NEF has 369 million, which is uncommitted cash at hand. And to discharge the 2017-18 strategy, at least 500 million would be required as a cash injection. And we are also pleased to inform the committee that the 500 million rand facility has been approved by the IDC. We are just going through the various, the final, this thing, CPs, and if all goes well, we should be able to close. Condition precedent. So when you raise money, so there's a long list of things that you'd be required to comply with. So this is what is called is the legal, you know, it would be, you know, captured in your legal agreements. So one of those things, for instance, the legal CP is where the IDC would say they want to see the cabinet approval. So where cabinet will expressly say that they are happy with the merger between the NEF with the IDC. I'm just giving you as an example. Yes. Due to the high risk mandate of the NEF, credit risk is considered a critical to high exposure area. The tough economic conditions and low growth rates have negatively impacted on some of the businesses that are supported by the NEF, subsequently resulting in an increase in the number and value of transactions in distress. Initiatives to ensure the sustainability of the portfolio include enhanced screening, due diligence, and credit risk assessment processes, but also I've spoken about the work that we're doing in the turnaround and our restructures, workout and restructures units. So the mandate of the NEF on slide 31 is also to align to national priorities, and this encompasses the harnessing of economic growth potential and job creation. In this regard, the NEF explores growth sectors and identifies possible opportunities for our funding mandate. The Black Industrialist Program continues apace through the Strategic Projects Fund, whose mandate is to create new manufacturing in industrial capacity at the outset of projects, as opposed to doing so during equity closure. The failure to secure recapitalization would endanger the successful implementation of our Black Industrialist program. All we need, we're not saying if you have a 1 billion rand project that you are working on that government must invest 1 billion. All we'd be asking for is 50 million. Because once you have invested your 50 million, you will actually be in a position to crowd in other private investors. In fact, in the BusaMed example, I did not mention that, in fact, there are other international investors who are now interested in investing in that project. We have another one in the Black Industrialist space, which we invested in about 5 years ago, that is Link Africa. It's a company that is involved in the fiber optics space. So they came up with a wonderful technology of laying the fiber in a sewage system, as opposed to actually digging and laying the fiber. We put in our first 10 million, 50 million, 100 million in that entity. And honorable members, that's another example of how we have actually played our role in driving the creation of new industrial manufacturing capacity in South Africa, because that entity is now valued at 1.4 billion. There are other players now who actually want to come in, like serious global players, who actually want to come in as potential equity investors in that transaction. So that's another good example of a black industrial program that we've been involved in. Honourable members, alignment with government objectives is an important area in the implementation of the mandate of the NEF. Support is also required from your side to promulgate legislation to effect new industries, allowing us to invest in strategic sectors in support of key government initiatives and the creation of new job opportunities. To demonstrate the importance of such alignment, I have included two case studies, but I'll just go through one as my closing remark. And these are the investments that we have made into Mabele Fuels and Kinako Medical. The NEF here is one of the leading investors in one of the first bioethanol production plants to be established in South Africa. As the honorable members may be aware, bioethanol is an alcohol-based fuel produced primarily through a process of fermentation, mostly from carbohydrates that come from crops such as sweet sorghum, wheat, corn, and sugarcane. In the case of Mabele Fuels, the project intends to develop a fuel-grade bioethanol plant in Bothaville with capacity to produce about 154 million liters per annum in the Free State province, which is one of the economically depressed areas of the country. So the plant feedstock is grain sorghum, and the production methodology involves the process using grain milling through starch conversion to sucrose, as well as fermentation and drying that ultimately culminates in the production of saleable bioethanol. So this project has, honorable members, it has the potential to create 16,700 jobs in the Free State. The estimated cost per job is relatively low at approximately 149,700. Use of agricultural outputs in projects creates opportunities for community ownership through community trust or employee ownership scheme. So maybe you'll also think about the drought and think, so how are we going to be able to, you know, to grow our sorghum? So we are told by our top scientist in the area that sorghum is a crop that is very drought resistant. So it was a carefully chosen feedstock that we'll be using in this particular area. So this project presents an opportunity for rural socioeconomic development. The project offers a green, environmentally friendly alternative to the conventional use of fossil fuels, and lastly, it provides greater fuel security in countries such as ours, which has no oil reserves. So what we are saying, I won't go through each and every aspect of the project. We have not been able to continue with this project after we had invested our time, effort, and funding together with our local and international partners. We have been informed that the South African government has decided to shelf or put this particular initiative on hold. What is said about what has happened, honorable members, is that you have allowed the private sector players to come in and support a government initiative over a period of, it happened over a period of about 6 years, because the government called on the private sector to say, this is what we want to do. We came in partnership with our local and international partners to develop this project, we moved it from pre-feasibility, feasibility, and all the way to financial close. When it reached financial close, then we were informed by the South African government that, no, we are no longer interested. So we're saying, if we are serious about turning this economy around, if we want to do it in partnership with the private sector, that we need to find better ways of, you know, of formulating our policies, of also partnering with the private sector, because next time the government comes with another initiative, private sector will say, no, we don't trust you anymore. But also the process of getting to that conclusion that we don't want to pursue this anymore. I would like to find out from the honorable members what your role has been in this area, because you were all excited when we presented the project 4 years ago, when the government decided to can the project. I would like to find out about the engagement. Mabele. Yes, so just for our own information as well. The next slide is Kinako Medical case study. So another case study is Kinako Medical, which progressed from bankable feasibility to also financial close following a total injection of 180 million rand into a business that will be the only manufacturer of auto-disposable syringes and needles in the SADC region. What the NEF found out was that there is no local manufacturing of any type of syringes in South Africa, or indeed across Southern Africa. It is estimated that this project will create 108 direct jobs. The plant will produce a total of 250 million syringes and 200 million hypodermic needles per annum. The NEF commenced with a 7.2 feasibility study funding in 2013 and gave a hands-on approach in assisting a black industrialist to bring the project to bankability. The NEF made a further commitment towards the construction of the plant. We believe that this project has immense developmental impact because it's well positioned within the healthcare sector, you know, in South Africa. So on slide 38, what the project requires at this stage is partial designation, requires partial designation of government procurement of syringes by the Department of Health in order to secure sales for Kinako, because the only sales that we've been able to secure so far are in the US. So if the Americans are saying they will be happy to procure the syringes from a South African company, we actually find it difficult to understand why it would be difficult for our own government hospitals and even private sector hospitals to also procure, directly from us. So the case studies, we believe, aptly demonstrate the need for government support in order to enable job creation, local economic development, import substitution, industrialization, and radical economic transformation. I will speak briefly about the work that we're doing with the Department of Rural Development. Honorable members, one of the NEF's proudest achievements is the NEF's partnership with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform in the implementation of the program called Strengthening of Relative Rights of People Working the Land, also known as the 50-50 Project. The MOU between the NEF and Dr. DLR was concluded in January 2016 following the Honorable Minister Nkwinti's request for the NEF to pilot 10 projects under the 50-50 Project, which seeks to benefit mainly farm workers, communities to acquire economic interest and equity in the agricultural land and businesses where they are working or living. So this policy entails the farmer acquiring 50% of the business and the farm workers acquiring the other 50%, of which 5% will be allocated to the National Empowerment Fund to be operated under a NUCO. The land is then acquired by the state and leased back to the business for 30 years. The NEF and the Department of Rural and Land Reform concluded a service level agreement in February last year to implement the pilot projects, which pilot was successful, as we'll demonstrate shortly. The department had handed 30 projects to the NEF for implementation by 31st March 2017. So firstly, we undertook due diligence investigations into the projects in order to determine the value and commercial viability of the businesses. The NEF also had the responsibility to negotiate the prices for the acquisition of land and businesses on behalf of the department and finalizing the structure of transactions. The NEF also drafted investment reports for submission to the ministerial technical team that is led by Minister Gwindi and the ministerial coordinating committee. On slide 43, already we can point to several milestones since the partnership began in January, ranging from funds disbursements and agreements that will be signed following negotiations that have been facilitated with farmers. In Limpopo, 6 beneficiaries will become shareholders in a game farm valued at 21 million. In the Eastern Cape, a total 10.5 million has been fully disbursed to empower 40 farm workers to become co-owners in a farm that grows and processes pineapples. In the Eastern Cape, 58 farm workers stand to become co-owners in a citrus farm valued at just over 38 million rands once the necessary agreements have been signed. Also in the Eastern Cape, 45 workers are now part owners of a farm valued at 65 million. The vineyards specialize in wine production. We also gave the honorable members some small pastels of wines last time we were here. 29 workers will also co-own a pineapple farm valued at 5.3 million in the Eastern Cape. In KwaZulu-Natal, a disbursement of 33 million rands has empowered 55 workers to co-own a farm that specializes in the production of sugarcane and timber. Right here in the Western Cape, 18 permanent and 180 seasonal farmers will co-own a 75.1 million farm specializing in the production, slicing, and dicing of table grapes and vegetables once the applicable agreements are signed. I just wanted to take the honorable members through that list, but you can go through that whole list at your own leisure. It's just an example of the work that we've been doing with the Department of Rural.
Just before we move from slide 43, of course I've seen a lot on the citrus, the wine and vegetables, but one of them here, quite interestingly, in Limpopo, is a game farm agreement still to be signed, and then the nuts. Now, if you could just expand on those two, because I believe the nuts can bring in quite a lot of foreign exchange, from what one has heard.
Mm-hmm.
And then in terms of the game, of course, we want to keep our, sort of a game going, as it were.
Yes. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I will ask Shengwe to talk to those two because she's been close to the process.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. So the game farms and... In Limpopo, actually, there's two of them. The first one is the Dapchik one, which has been partially dispersed. So it's game farms that the department identified during, because they send out invites to farmers who want to participate in the program. So they then actually took a long time for us to conclude the transaction because by its nature, game is difficult to identify and to value, so we had to also engage other specialists to help us with the proper valuation of the game, because we don't want to say our employees have got value worth this much when they do not. And what we are doing for most of the projects, including the NATS project, is to say how can we help them get additional markets, also with the project that Sale spoke about earlier, the SOMS data. Delta project, the wine project. So we package the transactions, get them dispersed, but we also provide support posts to make sure that those projects are sustainable going forward.
Thank you very much just on that one, yes. and the only reason I mention that is I understand is that cashew nuts, which really can bring in a lot of foreign exchange in this regard. So what a good idea. Right, thank you.
Engage the Honourable Chairperson later so that we can, I mean, that's the, you know, the reason why we are here, to also get guidance and other ideas on how we can take these projects forward. I did not mention point number 10 in the Western Cape, where 56 employees will soon be shareholders when the agreement is signed for them to co-own a wine grape farm priced at 160.4 million. We also have in Limpopo 42 farm workers who will co-own a game farm that is valued at 44 million. And then in the Free State, where we have 253 workers in a farm specializing in nuts, valued at over 52 million rands. So the total value of the project that the minister has allocated to the NEF so far is valued at about 1 billion rands, and we are really, really excited, honorable members, about this partnership, because this is what really kept the NEF going before we were able to finalize the major discussions between the NEF and the IDC. So as we are doing all this work for Minister Ngwindi, then we went back to him to say, Minister, we've been doing the work. We are part of government as the NEF. We've been doing it pro bono. So can you please pay us a small fee so that we can also pay the salaries of our employees, because you have this allocation, we are doing the work. And honourable members, I'm happy to also confirm that the minister has agreed to, they were already giving us something last year, which actually went, we put that, it went into our OPEX budget, just our normal OPEX budget. But the minister has actually agreed to increase that particular fee to a higher amount, which will actually assist us in paying our salaries going forward. And the interest end on the funds as well has also accrued to the NEF. So negotiations on slide 46 are in progress to ensure more farm workers and dwellers are economically empowered through this project in farms that are valued collectively at 1.2 billion. To name a few of these, one is a maize and cattle farm in KwaZulu-Natal, where 192 employees could become shareholders in a property priced at 360 million. In the Free State, a group of 80 farm workers could soon co-own a game and cattle farm valued at 400 million rands. In the Northern Cape, three workers could end up owning a sheep farm valued at 8.5 million, and celebrations could soon be in the air when 187 workers become shareholders in a poultry farm in Mpumalanga. So, honourable members, I don't think there's a need for me to talk about, the impact. I think it's issues that the honourable members deal with on a daily basis. It's there in the slides, just for noting. We thought to share with the honourable members the NEF's organisational structure. The NEF is governed by a board of trustees. The chairperson is here with us today. That reports to the DTI and is aided in the discharge of its work by various board subcommittees. The operational implementation of the mandate of the NEF resides with the executive committee, which is assisted by managers and departments that mirror the conventional corporate spectrum. The NEF currently has a staff complement of 157 people with an optimal headcount of 195. So we have not hired or filled those vacancies because of the recapitalization issues that I alluded to earlier on. In conclusion, we wish to gratefully acknowledge the continuous support, guidance, and wisdom of the Portfolio Committee. I was saying to the chairperson earlier on that when the country is now, when the country started talking about the need for us to support black industrialists, I think through the support and guidance that we had received from this committee, the NEF was ahead of the curve because we started working on our black industrialist program as early as, early as 2009, because Parliament kept on saying, Parliament and the board kept on saying, yes, we are doing well in terms of supporting the owners of petrol stations and, you know, the franchises that we have, but how about the creation of, you know, black and industrial, even though you are not calling it black industrialists, that's how we ended up getting involved in that program. So when the country is now debating the need for us to drive radical economic transformation, I also believe that it's a lot of these initiatives, honorable members, that we've been looking at over the last few years, where you'd be saying, what about investments in the provinces? What about supporting rural communities? What are you doing in the townships? So with the little that we had at our disposal, we've been able to actually play our small role in terms of driving, you know, this transformation agenda. So thank you very much for your support.
Thank you very much, CEO. I mean, this slide of yours in 47 just spells it all out, the new approach that we need to pursue. You know, the fact that farm workers are entrepreneurs, you know. We need to look at things differently. But I just want to approach everyone here for a moment. The lunch has been outside for 45 minutes. And there's a need for us just to take a decision. We could do 10 minutes, just go and get our lunch, etc., you know, and we'd still be here 15 minutes. Because it's, so I'm looking at you sitting there. Let's have some comment. Yes, Honourable Mantash.
Chairperson, I would propose that we continue to our work and finish then. Okay.
In the past, you know, I'm often people feel that I'm, you know, forgetting they've got tummies, etc. Okay, all right. I think we certainly want members to come in with their questions and that, but and then I'll come in after that. So let's have these issues coming up, Honourable Williams, followed by the Honourable Mantash, followed by the Honourable Van Schalkwyk.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I just want to welcome the presentation. I've just got three questions. One is not a question, it's a comment. In the beginning, you said you didn't want to say too loudly that our economy is owned and controlled by white people, and I think that you should say it loudly all the time because it's still the case, and you shouldn't be intimidated by anybody because it is the truth that our economy is owned and controlled by white men. I just want to know, in all of your slides, I just want to know, cooperatives were not mentioned at all, and I want to know, are those, you know, like the ones you've got up currently, you know, negotiations in progress, are those cooperatives that those, you know, the people, like the farms, for instance, have they become cooperatives? So I just want to know what effort you're putting in on cooperatives. And lastly, I just want to know, has there been a follow-up to the companies that we visited on oversight? And if so, what did they say? And have their, you know, their complaints, what they raised with us, has it been addressed yet? I mean, have you been to them and asked them if it's been addressed? Because we have raised it with DTI. I just want to know if anything's come of it. Thank you.
Thank you for raising that issue, Honourable Williams. Honourable Mantash.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also would, you know, I welcome the presentation and applaud the entity on progress that has been registered so far. But I also want to encourage them, as Honourable Williams is saying, to say it louder that the economy is still in the white hands. we before you we had the retail sector here,
yeah.
And all managers were white males. So we still have a long way to go. And a mountain to climb, because it's not going to be very easy, but soldier on. One other thing, maybe aligned to what I was like saying before you finish your presentation. It's natural that you'll be biased towards poor. The pie is shown on slide 21. Shows that the so-called richer provinces benefit the most from your activities. I'm glad that there's some drops that you take into the poor provinces. Look at the percentages on that pie. And we wish that the situation can be turned around going forward. Because when we talk empowerment, we talk of all the provinces. Yeah, we see that you're going there, but still, please take care of those poor provinces. We need to leave them in an equal footing as those that have been referred to as previously advantaged. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much,
Honorable Mantash. Honorable Banskalpe.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would also like to welcome the presentation. It's really insightful. We see that really there are some progress being made, although it's not necessarily where we want it to go. But indeed, the NEF is playing a vital role in ensuring that. Coupled with this, I would like to know, in terms of many small businesses and up-and-coming businesses, what initiatives do we have in place to ensure capacity building as well as marketing skills are being transferred to those industries that you are or companies that you are providing support to ensure that they are in the end successful businesses? Also with regards to the 2015 brand audit survey of the National Empowerment Fund, can you give us some progress on the operational inefficiency, lack of brand empathy, as well as the limited brand trust that you encountered with regards to that survey? If you can also give me some info with regards to the issue of once empowered, always empowered strategy that or practice that's taking place, if you can just elaborate on that more. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Van Beek, Skalbeek. I just want to clarify a couple of pointers with yourself, CEO, and the team. One, I'm very pleased to note that you've now got regional offices in all of the provinces, and indeed their value is certainly been underlined in the presentation that you made here this morning. But, you know, I am concerned, as you are no doubt, about the Mabele project. And I know the DG is here, fortunately, and the Chief Operating Officer, etc. The fuel's there because we've done this investment, and a key condition precedent to fund that drawdown was the finalization of the government's biofuels sector subsidy. Now, I realize we've got a new Minister of Energy in place now, but I would certainly want to ask our DG and also our Minister to pursue this and get some form of clarification in that regard. Is this going to be on hold indefinitely? What are we looking at here in this regard? Because I'm not aware that our policy as such has changed. The other thing is the Kanako medical case study. Some of you, well, actually now that I look to see who's here, no one was here 6 years ago in this committee. But some years ago, perhaps the DG may remember and a few others, we were in the one of the V rooms across there, and the issue around the plastics and these syringes came up and the closure of factories in that regard, and we were saying, but there's got to be a market for this sort of thing. There's got to be. I mean, there's nothing here. We don't want to import all of it. So it's with concern that I hear what you are saying, CEO, that it would appear as if we are not as effective in getting buyers from the public sector or its parastatals of these syringes. That's what I thought I heard you saying, that we can get orders from outside the country, and therefore our syringes would appear to have faced, you know, when I say outside the country, from outside agencies perhaps operating within Africa. I'm thinking of maybe the World Health that you may have a, you know, a relationship with in this regard. So what is the problem here? I mean, we're saying localized manufacturing, here's a good product, and we seem to be struggling to get buyers for this product. That's what it sounded like anyway. The other thing which I was pleased to note, somewhere along here, you spoke about what is called an empowerment dividend. I think it was probably slide 3, was it, or 13, right at the beginning. And I think that that conceptualization of the work we do and what we expect of it, I think is a great way of understanding it. So the empowerment dividend, it's not only a financial return per se, but how else? And then it leads on to the radical transformation of our country and the profiling thereof. But if you would respond to that, and before you respond, to note that some of the members here had to go and deal with security issues such as their cards, fingerprints and the like. They really didn't have a choice. They were simply summoned to go and get this done. So I apologize for the two members that are missing. Thank you. Honorable Mantash, just coming in there.
Can I just write on the response that is going to go ahead on something that I have concerns me. Maybe it's my illiteracy. Your Busa Hospital, what is that name again? Ibusament. It may be good that we have put the seat there, but I just want to check if their operations are not contradicting the vision of the National Health Insurance, National Health Insurance. Does it not contradict what we're trying to do in that policy? Because we need to look at not obstructing the things we're trying to do on the policy front. Yeah, business may be happy about it, but what about the impact of the establishment of private hospitals funded by our own entities, as opposed to the introduction and our fight for the realization of the National Health Insurance, which is the ANC policy? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mantash. Yeah, I think that would be, time is on your side, you've got it there. Please, if you can, address these issues. And then perhaps at the end of everything, the DG may be able to come in and make a comment. Thanks. Over to you, CEO.
Thank you, Honorable Members. So I will request my colleagues to also come in and support me. So I will allocate some of the questions to them. Otherwise, they will just feel that they are just passengers here. So Clarks will deal, Mr. Mulepo will deal with the question on our role in supporting cooperatives in the country, because he will know exactly where the cooperatives would be in that list of projects that I shared with the honorable members. But we have actually supported them even in other sectors of the economy, not just in the agro-processing space. I'll ask Ms. Makatini-Hlengwe to deal with the the feedback on the oversight visits. So that was to Smith Capital and Unique Engineering. I participated in the Unique Engineering one. Honorable Manta.
Sorry, it's like my mic. When we
had an engagement with those companies before the parliament I'm not an English person. There was a contradiction from what is that company? Was it Smith? Unique Engineering. When we were on oversight, they were crying foul to say they are not being given opportunities of business by our state-owned enterprises. They were given contracts which did not come to fruition. But when they came to us on that third day, they contradicted all what they said before us in the oversight. They said everything now is fine, and for me that was shocking. I was really shocked to say we have presented a report to Parliament that was lying, because we presented what we found out on oversight. But when they came to Parliament's interview, a different story was now displayed. Can you elaborate on that?
Honourable Mantash, you are referring to the Naledi company.
The Naledi men. I'm just mixing our names of the company.
To this day, all I can say, it was a road to Damascus conversion. But let us say, yeah. we say this, that, the next thing.
Okay.
Let us allow the CEO, Ms. Mtetwa, to continue.
Okay, so there were two site visits, and thank you for your comments once again, Honorable Mandash. So that was a presentation that was done by the IDC client. It's not one of our clients. You visited Smith Capital, and you'll remember that I also joined you when we did the site visit of Unique Engineering, so we'll talk about those two. Yes, so there's no need for us to even give background on what these companies do. So those will be the two questions. So on the question that was raised by Honorable Mantash on the provincial split, where you are concerned about the fact that most of our investments are still concentrated in the Gauteng region or province, I think we have actually made a significant improvement in that area, in that you'll remember that in the last maybe 3 years we've moved from 60% to 44%. So we are making, you know, a lot of progress in terms of providing support, you know, in those less developed provinces of the country. However, what I would like to say here, even with this progress that we are making, we are not satisfied. You know, we believe that we could still do more. But what we always say to the provincial departments, especially MECs for economic development, is that we want to work with the provinces, because there's no way you'd be able, with only 157 employees, to actually cover the whole country. So we don't even want to come here and misrepresent the facts to the honorable members and say, with the 157 employees that we have, that we'll do everything. The only best way of doing it, already the Department of Rural has given us this long list of projects. Remember that when we are looking at our resources, they are constant, but the work is expanding. If we really wanted to do more and do more work in the provinces, then we should actually have more resources that would be allocated to the NES. Because even though we are celebrating the fact that we have opened our provincial offices, we only have about 3 people who are manning those offices, which is not sufficient. So if you look at how many people do we have here in Cape Town. We only have 3 people, but they must cover the whole of the Western Cape. So I'm just saying, if we want to see the desired results, let's make sure that we invest appropriately in those areas. Otherwise, I know you've been, complaining about this issue for quite some time, but if you don't have the resources, this is the little that we can do with.
Chairman, can I come in to support the CEO on this point as well? Honorable Mantash, this is a point that you've raised a number of times at these meetings. I think, and as a board, we've taken it to heart. And my executive will be testament to that as well. It's a drum that that we beat when we do the planning for the year and when we do the performance evaluation. And I often quote you in the board meetings to say that I'm not going to be the one that stands up in front of Honorable Mantash and say that we haven't achieved these targets. And that target of 25% started many years ago at 10. We pushed it up to 15. It's at 25, but we'd like to get it. And you can see we've only targeted 6 provinces off the 9, or as we call them, underrepresented provinces. And what the CEO was referring to was that 44% green bracket, which green block that we see there. Gauteng, not so long ago, represented 60 or 65%. What we haven't done is we haven't cut down Gauteng. We've actually grown the other provinces so that the proportional representation decreases. But your point is noted, and those 25% targets, we'll probably try and push them up more over the next few years. I know the executive will be not so pleased with that. That's our job.
So, Honorable, thank you, Chairperson. So just to finish this issue, Honorable Williams was saying earlier on that sometimes we should just confront some of the challenges that the country is faced with and not be too scared to say certain things because we are in Parliament. What is very sad about what is happening is that if you look at the allocations that are given to white companies in South Africa, who are actually pumping billions of rands into white-owned businesses. If I can just estimate how much would be coming from the government side, SOEs, DFIs, which would be supporting white-owned businesses, it would be close to about 50 billion rands or more per annum. So what Parliament is asking us to do, with due respect, even though we are doing it, as I said, with the little resources that we have at our disposal, we are saying for black-owned companies or for black people, let's actually split the crumbs. We are splitting the crumbs. You are stretching it, 1 billion, which is like, for me, it's like the crumbs, really, if you look at the size of the South African economy, which is worth trillions of rands. We're saying as black people, so I don't know, out of the 56 million black South Africans, how many would be out of the 56 million who would be black entrepreneurs. We're saying we're giving you 1 billion, but make sure that you stretch this camp as much, as widely as you can. I just wanted to close off on that and move on to the next question, which was related to our investment in BoosterMed, about whether this was Honorable Mantash, about whether we are not going against the regulations of or the policies of the South African government, where they've been talking about the need for the country to establish the national health insurance. I fully agree with Honorable Mantashe that that's what has happened with this particular investment, but it doesn't take away from the fact that it's been a good investment. So the South African government took I think a decision was actually taken about 3 years ago that the state-owned entities will not invest in the private healthcare sector in South Africa. So, but we started investing because you remember that if you go back to my presentations, you'll see that we started making this investment over a long period of time. I think we started working on it about 6 years ago already. So going forward, there's just no way we'll continue supporting those types of businesses. But what you said about this decision that has been taken by the South African government, it's actually denying black entrepreneurs the opportunity of playing in the same space as your white companies. So I do respect the decision. As the NEF, we have always tried to comply with the policies of the country, but I'm saying it's something that the South African government will actually regret. So we have said, made similar observations with some of the policy initiatives that were taken in the past, and we've been vindicated in quite a number of instances. On this one, because if the National Health Insurance doesn't succeed as a policy initiative, it would be an opportunity cost to the black entrepreneurs in South Africa, because we said, okay, you can't invest here. This is for white companies only. Invest in other things. This is not for you. Even though the private healthcare sector is actually one of the fastest growing sectors within the South African economy, we're saying, we're shutting the door, we're saying, it's not for you. Go and find other sectors. That's what we're saying. With this, if we're to look at the return on investment, the kind of return that we've made with just one investment is the highest that we've been able to achieve so far. With a small investment that we've made, the return has been one. So it's one of the fastest growing sectors in the economy, but we're saying black people can't invest in it. But we will respect the laws of the nation, but it doesn't obviously stop us as black professionals from saying we believe that our parliament, our government, that maybe is making a mistake here, that maybe is something that you should apply your minds to going forward.
I am asking this deliberately because we're going for a policy conference in June, and I wanted their input on this matter because it's a sore point on us. I understand the business version of you, but that input we can use as we debate in the policy conference because we're policymakers. And in fact, it is also our responsibility to be watchdogs of the implementation of our policies that we cannot run away from.
Now, I think the point was made, and CEO trying to respond to that particular point, as I understood it, it was a question of all space, all of the business space should be open to everyone, but especially given the distorted or skewed situation in our country, economically speaking, there was a need to redress that kind of situation alongside, keeping in mind that we need a national health insurance. But there's no law in our country currently that may say no more hospitals built, no more this. In fact, often one hears, and I don't know how factual this is, that the government itself the pressure is released off the government sector when such things occur. But I think you're quite right. Certainly, the African National Congress is going to a policy conference, and these are issues which will be debated there, of course. The CEO, Ms. Mtetwa.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. In fact, the other
anomaly here, I just forgot to mention, is that the Department of Health is the one that has issued these licenses to black entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
They issue the licenses, and the provincial governments are also issuing licenses to black entrepreneurs. Our role is to support them once they have actually received or had those opportunities. But what was happening for us is that when we've been opening our hospitals, the Minister of Labour has been there with us, so at least it gives us a sense of comfort that we will not lose our jobs. And the Deputy Minister of Health, by the way, he was also there with the Honourable Chairperson of the Trade and Industry.
So at least we're saying
we are compromised.
So we're all in trouble. And then there was a question on the support that we are providing to SMMEs in terms of capacity building and training. When I did my presentation, Honourable Member, I did mention that we do provide 9 financial support through various interventions that we're doing. We have a pre-investment division at the NEF that acts as the first point of contact between the NEF and our applicants. So they will provide product advisory services. They will also manage the online business plan solution. They will also facilitate entrepreneurial training and incubation. All these things, they have targets. We don't just mention them in a vacuum. The board would actually want to see how many entrepreneurial training sessions we have had, especially in the rural areas and in the townships. We'll have targets, and then we monitor that on a quarterly basis. The business plan toolkit is up and running now, because there's another market failure that we have identified as the NEF, that when you say to black South Africans that you have to come with a comprehensive business plan, because otherwise, even if you have a good concept, it still has to go through the various corporate governance structures of the NEF. You can't access our funding unless you come up with this business plan. So we have tried to demystify this business planning process by putting our business plan toolkits, so that if you say you want a balance sheet or a cash flow analysis, so that our people won't run away, because they think it's actually a very complicated concept, when in fact if you, it prompts you, it will say, okay, how many of these things you're going to be selling on a daily basis, on a monthly basis, how are you going to cost it, you know, as you enter all of these details, you know, by the end of it you have, you know, your cash flow analysis. But if you just say cash flow analysis, they think is something that is very, very complex. So that's what it does, and I would urge the members of parliament, when you just have, you know, extra time, just, you know, log onto this. Yes, just for you to see if it's really doing what we want it, you know, to be. So it's there, it's freely available, and even after you have developed your business plan through the NEF, it allows you to access funding from other funders as well. It doesn't limit you to just raising the funds from the NEF. We also have, once we have invested the post-investment support, which is the work that we're doing with the Department of Rural in terms of providing training, mentorship to some of the farm workers, but it's something that we've been doing for many years. I'm just mentioning the Department of Rural. So if your business is not doing well, you don't have to disappear or run away. We have allowed our investee companies to actually have that ongoing engagement with our post-investment officials if, you know, there is a need for them to actually get additional support from the NEF, so it's working and we're actually very excited about it. And then on the Once Empowered, Always Empowered policy, sure, where should I start? So basically what this policy says is that you once had, let's say you are a mining company and you had a BEE partner. Let's say for argument sake, the net asset value of this company, let's say it's 1 billion rand. You sell your 10% to your BEE partners as a mining company, and so they must raise 100 million from, you know, the financial and the capital markets, 100 million, because they want to acquire this 10% stake in your company. So the way some of these funding models have been structured over the last 10 or 15 years would be that you will depend on the dividend flow that you are going to receive from this company, the mining company, to actually repay the loan, because it's 100 million, but it's still a loan because you must go and raise the funding in order to finance that acquisition. So what has happened with most, in fact, you must do that analysis, is going to be very interesting, especially with a lot of the mining assets, is that people came in as the black equity partners. They borrowed money in order to acquire the stakes in the companies they were buying equities in, on the understanding that the dividend payment were going to be sufficient to cover the loan repayments. But that has never, it didn't actually happen. I would say maybe in 70% of the cases it did not materialize. So you'll find that at the end of the 10-year tenure, that the black company with black beneficiaries, because a lot of these schemes would have the BEE partner, and then they would have the broad-based component to it in line with the requirements of the mining charter. So at the end of the 10 years, I can give you real examples, though. I would have to get permission from those companies, real examples, of actually showing and demonstrating that they didn't receive a cent for 10 full years. And by that time, the transaction was underwater because you can't repay the loan. By that time, the loan has actually ballooned because it's a loan of 100 million. There's the interest that accumulates, and at the end of 10 years, you owe the bank 250 million. So nothing would have accrued to the black beneficiaries. Instead, the amounts would have actually ballooned out of proportion, so it's 10 years. So what you said about those funding instruments and scenarios is that during the 10-year period, the mining company would have converted the old mining rights into the new mining rights, because now you have a, you know, it was a, you know, a policy requirement that you have to convert. So you enjoy the full benefits of the mining license on the back of this new partner that you have, but the sad reality is that the black partners did not receive anything during that period, and yet the mining company would have received the full benefits. So that's why I was saying we need to actually unpack the financing structures. We need to unpack the types of funding instruments we've been using to actually facilitate some of these transactions. So what this Once Empowered, Always Empowered says is that if I have had this black partner, and if they decide to exit, I must still be regarded as BEE compliant, regardless of the fact that nothing really, that there were no, that there was no economic interest that accrued to the black hands during that period. So that's what the debate is about. So I don't know if it's...
I think that explains it.
So I'm not taking a position. I'm saying Parliament and obviously government would have to apply their minds as to how they actually want to deal with it. The way we had dealt with it in the courts, we said, if, let's say, during the 10-year tenure, some equity interest had actually accrued to black beneficiaries, that would actually count as your black equity. So let's say at the end of the 10-year period, black people, you know, had received, let's say, 50 million as dividends coming from the company they had bought into, you'd actually count the 50 million as black entity because it's something, it's tangible, it has actually accrued to black hands. But where nothing has gone back to black hands, you can then claim the full benefits of BEE. But I'm sure the DG will talk to that issue more authoritatively later on. Mwemisa will talk about the brand audit. Kinako and Mabele, I think I've already explained what the real issues are, and then I think the chairperson was just commenting on the empowerment dividend that she likes it as an indicator of measuring our role in driving black industrialization in the economy. So Shengwe, you start with the oversight visit, then Slack will deal with
Thank you, CEO. So the honourable members will remember that when they visited Smith Capital, one of the issues that they raised was capacity issues because of the demand for the work that they are getting from their clients. So in March, actually towards the end of March, the Board Investment Committee of the NEF approved a further 8 million rands to support Smith Capital in delivering on the additional work that they are getting from their clients because now they are empowered. We are still assisting them with engaging with the city of Ogoruleni to for them to get the additional land that they need to expand their operations. With Unique Engineering, most of the issues they were raising were around the issues of support from especially state-owned entities, and they raised the similar issues when they, together with Transnet and Prasa, came here. So we continue, you know, helping them engage with those entities to make sure that they do get additional work allocations from them.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Williams, for the question. Maybe just to start off with that, as the NEF, we have got the Rural and Community Development Fund, whose strategic objective is to unlock economic, you know, value to communities in the rural and peri-urban areas. And we have got lots of examples on how we have, you know, unlocked value to many of these communities. And we have even moved beyond just cooperatives, but by ensuring that communities in the form of community trusts, in the form of employee trusts, become broad-based, you know, owners of some of the investments that we have made. An example in point is the Jozini Tiger Lodge that we have presented to the honorable members before. Just here in the Western Cape, you have got Imbaza, a muscle where a group of ladies have formed a cooperative where they are harvesting your black mussels, and they take them to Lavi for processing, and some of those is, you know, are what we eat, you know, out when we go out. Now let's come to the Dr. DLR. Dr. DLR, when Minister Nkwinti, obviously through the government approval, came up with this strengthening of relative rights, I think it is important for us to start at the beginning. And the beginning is that farm workers were just farm workers who were not organized in any way, who were just providing labor, who, as you would know, honorable member, staying in some of these farms at times to three generations, and then they just get evicted when the farmer sells that particular farm to another owner. The government, in implementing this 50 50 program was to say, over and above having provided labor, they need to become owners. Now, because you're going into these transactions with people who were not homogeneous in the sense of having grouped themselves into a cooperative, one of the things that we are doing, if you look at the objectives of our work, especially slide 42, is that over and above concluding these transactions, one of the things that we do is social facilitation, where we'll go in and say to the workers, now that you are owners, how do you form yourself into a coherent unit where you can speak with one voice by becoming, as you are owners of this, amongst others, form yourselves into cooperatives, into community trusts, and into employee trust as well. So I think in that regard, part of our role is that once these transactions are concluded, we need to go in and do social facilitation, which the CEO spoke to, where we go in and teach these people what it means to be an owner, governance structures, how do you actually hold a meeting, how from, you know, that day they are no more just seeing themselves as waiting for, you know, maybe, excuse my language, honorable member, a bus, you know, Williams, but now being equal partners, equal partners with his owner, because now they are no more just workers, but they are now part of, you know, the ownership structure in those transactions. And I think that is really what we are doing. We are continuing to implement those things and ensuring that we speak to them on a one-to-one basis, in them understanding what it means to be an owner rather than just having the provider of labor. Thank you.
Back to Mr. Malenko.
Yes.
Right. Thank you very much. The divisional executive, small and medium, et cetera, rural development. I am just, I do want the DG to come in before I mention everyone who is here today now that I have the list. So, DG, would you just
yes.
come in here?
Yes, very briefly, then I'm...
One yeah. moment, DG.
There was one question, the last one, on the brand, what is...
Oh, yes.
Thank you, Honourable Fobbs and Honourable Members. We're pleased to report that the brand of the NEF has stabilised quite remarkably over the last few years. An example being, of course, the last brand audit that had pegged the brand awareness of the NEF at 81%, and how we do this. And I know that Honourable Members have participated in these surveys in 2015 and in the recent one that we conducted in 2017. So how we conduct this is we survey a sample that represents the broader spectrum of people who have some level of interaction with the NEF. It would be the mass media, it would be parliamentarians, it would be decision makers in government, but it would also be, you know, entrepreneurs, you know, across the country. And so brand awareness would measure spontaneous recall and understanding of the products and services of the NEF. And after that survey of about 900 respondents, 81% of them, it was found, you know, understood the NEF, you know, quite well. We're pleased to report that this has increased in the last brand audit that was conducted just a few months ago, from the previous 81% to 86%. So there has been growth, and in fact, for the next, you know, for the year ahead, I think the next 2 years. The target will be to reach 90%, after which we will then start, assessing brand reputation, which are some of the questions that Honourable Member from Scarborough was asking about in terms of operational effectiveness, brand equity, and brand trust. I've got those statistics for you. The latest findings in terms of operational efficiencies rank the NEF at 62.4%. We would want to grow this to 80% going forward. Similarly, with regard to brand empathy, and this is a very important one, and we have been under the stick from the Board of Trustees, we measure at 59% at this current juncture. In terms of brand trust, 59.1%. And with regard to overall brand strength, which measures reputation, it stands currently at 60.5%. And of course, these are still early days. We would want to grow these, you know, to an average of about 80% over the next 2 years. What we are pleased about is that the standard industry average for all of these measures is 57%, and we're above that. But of course, we want to grow these to higher levels going forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is that Mr. Motsepe?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you very much. Can we then shift to the Director General, Mr. October?
Thanks, Honourable Chair. I don't know if you took the earlier session on poultry to mean to be our lunch, but let me just make some concluding points. Just you asked a question about especially Mabele Fuels and Kenaco, which are both black-owned companies, which, as you can see, the NEF was actually pioneers in investing or agreeing to invest in these companies very early in the day. Both of these companies were frustrated again on the demand side. And it links back to when the minister launched the IPAP yesterday. We have to shift the discussion to the demand side of the economy, because DTI gives incentives, NEF gives loans, but both Mabele Fuels were unable to sell their product, or because there was no obligation put on the retailers or on the distributors of fuel to buy from Mabele Fuels. Secondly, on Kenaco, as you know, they needed to, the buyers of medical equipment and pharmaceutical products is National Treasury and Department of Health. And actually, the biggest buyers of pharmaceutical products is government. And again, they are not buying from local industry, not only from local industry, and they're not. So I think in terms of solutions, Honourable Chair, as you know, I think it's the point that Minister made yesterday at the launch, is that localization is going to have to become not just a DTI policy, it must become a government-wide initiative. So maybe some, maybe joint parliamentary groups, because if Department of Health and National Finance Committee can agree that they are going to actually implement the buy local. If we get that decision, it's going to be very easy for us to solve the problem, just like you did earlier with the retailers. As you know, it doesn't matter how much you give a company, those factories are standing, they're not running at full capacity, because until you get an order from a ShopRite or a Woolworths, you might as well forget about it. So the biggest problem facing black companies, obviously, is the one side is the finance. But once you get the finance, you need the market. And so I think, so just like you gave the, which is very good, and I'm thanking the committee, to saying to the retailers, show us who you're buying from your products. Similarly to state-owned enterprises. I think we solved that problem. Actually, in other countries, they don't even do the supply side. They only do the demand side. So in Taiwan, other countries, Germany, Siemens, they just buy all their trains from Siemens. And therefore, Siemens can invest, and they don't give Siemens a cent. But all of them make their money. Boeing makes their money from supplying the U.S., so they don't need any financial support because they get multi-billion rand orders from their governments.
It's got to stop. We have a national policy here. That policy is, you know, that we actually buy local in terms of the public sector. And we still said, well, what about the private as well? But it was pointed out to us that we didn't want to contravene the WTO, but our biggest procurers of these issues is the public sector. And where are the parastatals buying in state-owned companies? And I think, I'm glad the Honourable Hill Lewis is here. He had excused himself for a prior engagement earlier, that I do think Honourable Hill Lewis, I'm sure you would want to support the fact that we bring in these state-owned entities, give them this question, and grill them and drill down. They are state-owned entities. They must buy local. Is there something wrong with these syringes? No. In fact, you indicated, CEO, that someone external was interested in procuring. Who is that externality? Who is the person?
All I do know, Madam Chairperson, I will hand over to Seja, our engineer here. I know that the company is located in the U.S.
Thank you, CEO. Thank you, Chair. In the U.S., for the procurement of the syringes manufactured by Kinako, we use these agencies that are that will buy the syringes once they've achieved the certifications required with the FDA. So we use agencies for export agencies on the other side. They're the ones who have given us the offtakes.
Here we are. They wouldn't be buying them if there was something wrong or interested in procuring them, put it that way. Now, we must, I must say, the one tiny little seedling leaf one could take out of Trump's diary is buy local. You know, I certainly don't agree with the full ideological of his approach, but on that note, he certainly has sent out a very firm message. And before we insist that private companies be persuaded in this direction, government must set the lead. Government must set an example. State-owned companies had better realize it doesn't pay to bite the hand that feeds them. That is going to be, we are going to bring them in. We're not going to tolerate. You said this earlier, was it yourself, Honourable Van Schalkwyk, that we did not want people to break our laws with impunity. We certainly don't. And we are allowing them if we sit back. This issue can be raised in the budget. You should raise it all over the show. We do not want this approach. They are undermining us. In fact, it's bordering on treason the way they are acting. Anyway, let us just come to, I don't know, Honourable Hill Lewis, I know you had the early engagement. Was there a question you wanted to ask before I close, please?
The Chair wanted to make a point on the discussion that I came in on once empowered, always empowered. You'll recall that in the new codes there is an amendment made that requires 10% of those funds to be unencumbered. I believe it's 10%, is that right? I think DG, 10%, yeah? Unencumbered, which means that in that transaction that you've described, those black partners have to find 10 million rand cash up front to pay those shares, and 90% can be leveraged through debt. Now, so that is a way to try and ameliorate the problem that you've just described. But at the same time, I can also understand why the earlier version of the codes did not provide for unencumbered, because how many black South Africans truly have 10 million cash available to invest like that in the example you've provided. So I'm not entirely sure that the requirement of the 10% unencumbered funds is necessarily progress. But I do just want to say that I completely agree that there are many examples like the one that you have provided, CEO. But that's not to say that there are always failures. There are many times where, you know, remember the dividends depend on the success of the company, and mining companies have had a very tough time over the last, or since the end of the commodity super cycle, and their dividends have been very, very poor. But we heard last month in the press that there was a SPAR group a BEE scheme that vested after 10 years, and each black employee in the entire SPAR group got 250,000 rand. Now that is a very serious success. So it's not that these things are always failures. It all depends on the performance of the company, and that's obviously going to vary with the economy and the growth rate of the country, which should be more impetus for us to focus on growth and to focus on getting the economy right and working, because many of these schemes will be left underwater if they are not.
Yes, Yes, Honourable Nantosh, and then I'm going to hand over to the
end. I hear what Honourable Lewis is saying, but this has been happening since before 2008 economic crunch, and we cannot be now shop stewards of the business. This has been happening before the economic meltdown, and we are aware of those companies, some of us. So I don't want us to protect them. Let them be exposed that they have abused the BBBE policy. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mantosh. Would you come in here, please?
Sure. Just to clear, I'm not defending anyone. If there's people that have abused those dividends and not paid them when they were due, then obviously I'm just saying that sometimes those dividends haven't been there as a result of the economy, not as a result of abuse.
Okay, so you're agreeing on the abuse side. Let's hammer them, right? A CEO.
So, Chair, I just wanted to say to Honourable Lewis that I fully agree with him that the payment of those dividends would actually depend on the success of the company. However, we are also aware of all these schemes that some of these companies in the mining sector, not just in the mining sector, so if I can talk more about what's happening there, because I've been close to the process. So they would actually set up other schemes, because it depends on the success of the company, but it also depends on the dividend policy of that particular company. So if you are not going to declare any dividends, but also this process also of a... So you'll find that in the convoluted way of the shareholding structures, they've set up management companies. So before you are actually able to see the earnings of the company, some funds would have left as the management fees instead of being declared to the beneficiaries or to the black companies that were partners. It's that and the transfer pricing, which is actually very rife. A lot of our leaders have actually spoken about it. I think that it's something that the committee needs to get very close to actually understand the mechanics of this transfer pricing, to actually see how the monies have actually left some of these companies through transfer pricing. So some of the BEE schemes or investments have been successful. What we're saying is the NEF is that if we're to achieve maybe double the achievements of what, for instance, SPA has achieved, that will then be able to actually close this gap that everybody is worried about in the country. If the investments, the BEE transactions that were done 10, 20 years ago were going to yield the results, that maybe we'll then start seeing the types of, results that we're looking for.
All right. I think in principle we all agree that we cannot allow the flouting of legislation, etc., and that where this occurs we need to deal effectively with it as Parliament. We don't realize how powerful Parliament is. It has the power. Let's use this power. I mean, we didn't disseminate this at large, but one of the retailers were first objecting to coming here, but when we reminded them of our powers, constitutional powers, etc., they suddenly came in. Yes, we are here. This parliament is not a parliament of X or Y, but of the people, and therefore needs to be respected as such. But I do thank all of you for being here with us. I want to just acknowledge we have acknowledged the key stakeholders here, such as the DG and the Chief Operating Officer and so on, Ms. Jodie Scholes. We also acknowledge the Chief Executive Officer, Ms. Felisiwe Mtetwa. But for the rest, I haven't really acknowledged you, and that is... Rakesh Garash, the chairman, that is Innocencia Bule, the Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Malepo, the Divisional Executive SMME and Rural Development, Ms. Secha Kakane, Head of Strategic Projects Fund, Ms. Lingiwe Makatini, Divisional Executive, Venture Capital and Corporate Finance, and Mr. Matsepe, Head of Marketing. Communications, comms. Okay, I'm not too good on these abbreviations. All right. But I do want to thank you all for being here. This is an important fund. It has been effective in leveraging a large percentage of its capital that it's utilizing. And I would certainly want to see the recapitalization expedited. We've been asking for that for some time, and we would not like to hear of any impediment in that regard. I think the whole cabinet surely is committed to the policy of this country, and needs to be, and that needs to be taken seriously. On other matters, I need to just remind members that we do have a short meeting tomorrow. You remember we had IMSEP the other day and National Treasury couldn't make it. Do you remember that? Now, the incentives issue is an important one. Please come here. It is 8:30 to 10:30. You can certainly leave at 9:45, as you know, if you've got the other committees. It is important. This is a key sort of instrument in empowering and promoting our policies and entrepreneurs in this regard. The other thing I had wanted to really get going on the committee bill of debt, committee on debt, and I had hoped that by the 11th of May we were going to see it in the afternoon. After all, that is legislation. I'm looking at staff who are all smiling. I don't know what that means. But the reality is, just because it's a committee bill doesn't mean it must go into the dustbin of history. Is that clear? So I want to see this resuscitated with all the necessary oxygen. Also looking at Mr. Honourable Williams there, Honourable Hill Lewis, get the oxygen out, let's get moving on this bill. All right. No, I know that. I said I had hoped. You know, I think it's so important to listen to the semantics here. Had. You know, it takes us in the head hoped. Future perfect or something. No, members? Yes. Well, the bill is ready for us. Yes. So we will be looking at it. I see the lieutenants here on the right, champing at the bit. Thank you very, very much, all of you. If I've overlooked someone, I apologize. I see here researchers, Ms. Madalani, Naidu, and the two up here, Mr. Madima and Ms. Sheldon. Thank you. Meeting adjourned. Please avail yourself of the cold lunch. Thank you.